Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Our near-term goals must be clear. Immediate, unrestricted, and sustained humanitarian aid for besieged civilians in Gaza. Immediate and unconditional release of all hostages. And immediate and dedicated efforts to prevent the spread of violence, which is increasing the risk of spillover.
As small aid convoys of trucks begin entering Gaza, the United Nations is calling for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire and for far more aid to be allowed into Gaza, where the death toll from Israel's 17-day bombardment has topped 5,000, including over 2,000 children. Many in Gaza say they've run out of food, water, and fuel.
Does it make sense that 20 trucks will be distributed to 2,100,000 residents? What will each person take? This is a drop in the sea.
As the United States refuses to push for a humanitarian ceasefire, we'll speak to the Gaza-born Palestinian scholar Jihad Abu Salim of the Jerusalem Fund. Then, do not use our death and our pain to bring the death and pain of other people and other families. That was the message Noy Katzman gave during the eulogy for their brother Chaim Katzman, an Israeli peace activist killed during the Hamas attack on October 7th. Noy will join us today to talk about his call for peace. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. At least 400 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli air attacks on Gaza over the past day, according to health officials. Residents of the southern city of Khan Yunis said Sunday night's strikes were among the worst they've experienced. The death toll in Gaza has topped 5,000 people, with more than 14,000 wounded. Israel's intensifying assault on the besieged Palestinian territory included missile and artillery attacks on densely populated residential areas, including the Jabalia refugee camp. Israeli attacks also struck areas near Gaza's Al-Shifa and Al-Quds hospitals, with medical teams warning patients could be just minutes away from death due to shortages of fuel and electricity. The UN says at least 120 newborns in incubators, including premature babies, are at risk. This is Dr. Nasser Bulbul, head of the neonatal intensive care unit at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital.
We call on everyone to send the necessary medical supplies for this critical department, or else we will face a huge catastrophe, especially if the electricity is out in these departments where there are 55 babies. We will lose all those who need electricity within 5 minutes.
Some parents have taken to writing names on their children's bodies for fear they will die and not be able to be identified. Two convoys of up to 20 trucks carrying urgently needed aid started trickling into Gaza over the weekend through its border with Egypt. A third convoy is expected today, as humanitarian workers say much more aid is needed and much faster. On Sunday, Palestinian reporter Rashdi Siraj was killed when an Israeli strike hit his home. Siraj was the co-founder of the Palestinian company AIN Media. His killing comes 5 years after the company's co-founder, Yasser Murtaza, was killed by Israeli forces while covering Gaza's peaceful Great March of Return in 2018. At least 23 journalists have been killed since the war started on October 7th. The UN agency serving Palestinian refugees, UNRWA, reports at least 29 staff members have been killed in the past 2 weeks. Half of those were teachers. Meanwhile, leading Palestinian human rights lawyer and activist Rashi Sarani and his family are said to be safe following the Israeli bombing of his home in Gaza City. You can see our interviews with Rashi Sarani at democracynow.org. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli warplanes bombed a mosque in the Jenin refugee camp Sunday, killing at least two people. Camp residents said the airstrike came in the dead of night without warning.
Most people were asleep and some were awake when we saw a light and heard a loud explosion. We rushed to the scene where we saw killed and injured people, and we moved them to the hospital. Thank God. This is what happened.
Separately, Israeli forces killed five more Palestinians in raids across the occupied West Bank overnight, arresting dozens of people. Similar raids this month have killed at least 95 Palestinians, while doubling the number held in Israeli jails to more than 10,000 people. Meanwhile, Israel continued to strike Hezbollah targets inside Lebanon. Netanyahu has warned any efforts by Hezbollah to join the war would be devastating for Lebanon. Two American Israelis taken hostage on October 7th have been released by Hamas. Judith Ronan and her daughter Natalie, both from Chicago, were released by Hamas to the Red Cross Friday and returned to Israel from Gaza following a deal brokered by the government of Qatar. They're reportedly in good health. Over the weekend, a spokesperson for Hamas said the group offered to release two Israelis on humanitarian grounds, only to have Israel's government refuse the offer. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office dismissed the claim as mendacious propaganda. Israel's military says it believes 212 people are being held hostage in Gaza. Meanwhile, the Biden administration has reportedly advised Israel to delay an anticipated ground invasion of Gaza in order to allow more time for further hostage negotiations. Protests are continuing around the world. In London, 100,000 people marched to demand a ceasefire in Gaza Saturday.
Today, I'm here today to show my love and my compassion for the Palestinians who are suffering in Gaza and all the innocent lives that are being lost. We've came together today. It's not about religion. It's about humanity coming together and fighting for what's right.
Here in New York, multiple protests took place over the weekend. In Brooklyn, police cracked down on peaceful protesters Saturday, giving just a five-minute warning to disperse before assaulting and reportedly arresting 19 people. This is an activist speaking earlier in the day.
I'm here because I'm a Jew born in Jerusalem, and I'm horrified and enraged that my government here in the U.S. is sending weapons and money and never-ending unconditional diplomatic support for Israel as it ceaselessly slaughters Palestinians.
On Friday, a group of activists from Adala Justice Project, Jewish Voice for Peace, Dissenters and Dream Defenders occupied the D.C. office of California Congressmember Ro Khanna to demand he sign on to the resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. This is Sandra Tamari of Adala Justice Project.
Representative Khanna claims to represent progressive values, claims to care about his constituents. His constituents include Palestinians. His constituents include Muslims. We are dying. We're dying now. And we just need to say the word ceasefire. That's all we're asking for.
Ro Khanna's political director resigned over his refusal to sign on to the resolution. As the activists sat on the floor of Khanna's office, thousands of others marched on the National Mall to demand the U.S. back a ceasefire. This is Congressmember Ilhan Omar, one of 18 lawmakers who signed the ceasefire resolution.
Even when they interview people who are living under bombardment in Gaza, they do not ask questions that address their humanity. They do not ask questions that address what is happening to their psyche as they are living through this bombardment.
Ilhan Omar was standing in front of a podium that said, "Ceasefire now." Former Michigan Congress member Justin Amash has announced multiple members of his family have died in last week's Israeli airstrike on the St. Porphyrius Orthodox Church in Gaza. Amash posted a photo of two of his relatives, Viola and Yara, who were among the victims. Amash was the first Palestinian-American lawmaker to serve in the U.S. Congress. He was elected as a Republican in 2011, representing Michigan, but switched to independent in 2019. After backing the first impeachment of then-President Trump. Here in New York, the Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist Viet Thanh Nguyen says organizers canceled his appearance Friday after he signed an open letter condemning Israel's indiscriminate violence against Palestinians in Gaza and calling for a ceasefire. Some 900 people were expected to attend Friday's event at the 92nd NY for Nguyen's memoir about growing up as a refugee of the U.S. war on Vietnam. The cancellation came 2 days after Nguyen wrote on social media, quote, "The Israeli government and its supporters have sought to shut down any protest of Israel, including nonviolent ones like boycott, divest, and sanctions, which helps lead to the current situation where some can only see violence as a solution," unquote. 92nd NY is the former 92nd Street Y. This comes after scores of Palestinian-American activists say their scheduled appearances in TV and radio interviews have been canceled this month, while hotels and other venues have canceled events featuring Palestinians or speakers who've criticized Israel's human rights record. In Michigan, a funeral was held for Samantha Wall Sunday, the board president of a Detroit synagogue who was found stabbed to death outside her home Saturday. 40-year-old Samantha Wall of the Isaac Agri downtown Detroit synagogue was found by police who cautioned the public to not draw any conclusions as the killing is being investigated. Wall worked in politics, including for Congressmember Alyssa Slotkin, who said Wall, quote, dedicated her short life to building understanding across faiths, bringing light in the face of darkness. Wall also worked for Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel's reelection campaign. Nessel wrote in a tribute, quote, Sam truly used her faith and activism to create a better place for everyone. In Illinois, the mother of slain 6-year-old Wadia Al-Fayoum was released from the hospital over the weekend. The 32-year-old mom, Hanan Shaheen, was stabbed by her landlord, Joseph Zuma, at least 12 times in the racist attack that claimed her son's life. The brutal attack on the Palestinian-American family came as rights groups warned that dehumanizing rhetoric around the war on Gaza is putting the lives of Muslims and Arabs in the U.S. at risk. The 6-year-old Wadia was stabbed more than 20 times by his landlord. In Argentina, centrist presidential candidate Sergio Massa and far-right populist Javier Milei are headed to a runoff after neither candidate received the number of votes required to declare victory in Sunday's election. Massa took a surprising lead over Milei, who had previously secured the most support in August primary. Massa is Argentina's economy minister, a member of the Peronist ruling party, which has been widely criticized over the nation's soaring inflation and poverty. Massa addressed supporters Sunday night in Buenos Aires.
I want to tell each Argentinian that I will be the president of work and security above anything else. This is my biggest commitment.
Meanwhile, Milei is an admirer of former U.S. President Trump and has vowed to shutter Argentina's central bank, opposes sex education, wants to facilitate the purchase of guns, and is a climate crisis denier. He also spoke last night in Buenos Aires.
All countries that embrace the ideas of liberalism progress, while those who follow populist ideas unite in misery.
In Venezuela, voters took to the polls Sunday for a presidential primary election to decide who will challenge President Nicolas Maduro next year. Former Venezuelan lawmaker Maria Corina Machado quickly declared victory after preliminary results showed she received over 90% of the vote. Machado has vowed to privatize Venezuela's state oil industry. This was the first time Venezuela's fractured opposition coalition held a primary since at least 2012. Last week, Maduro's government and opposition leaders agreed to new rules ahead of next year's presidential general election. The move's expected to clear the way for the United States to ease its harsh sanctions on Venezuela. In Iran, two journalists who first covered the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini last September have been sentenced to prison. Elahe Mohammadi and Niloufar Hamidi were found guilty of collaborating with the U.S. government, conspiring against national security and propaganda against the state. They could each serve over 5 years in prison. They've both been held in Tehran's Evin prison for over a year. In related news, a 16-year-old girl has been declared brain dead after she was reportedly assaulted by Iran's morality police for not wearing a headscarf. Armita Jaravand was hospitalized with brain injuries and fell into a coma after witnesses said she was beaten by officers in a Tehran subway station earlier this month. A court in Pakistan has indicted former Prime Minister Imran Khan for leaking state secrets. Khan's PTI party said he, alongside former Deputy Shah Mahmood Qureshi, were charged in a closed-door trial and that they would appeal the ruling. Imran Khan was removed from office in a no-confidence vote last year and has faced a litany of charges since. Khan has accused the military of going after him. Meanwhile, Imran Khan's main rival and three-time former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif returned to Pakistan Saturday after a four-year self-imposed exile. Sharif hopes to make a political comeback ahead of January elections. He was convicted of corruption in 2018 and barred from running for office. But observers say he may be allowed to run thanks to a deal between the Pakistan Muslim League Party and the powerful army. And on Capitol Hill, Republicans dropped far-right Ohio Congressmember Jim Jordan as their nominee for House Speaker after Jordan's third vote attempt failed on the House floor Friday. In a secret ballot behind closed doors, just 86 Republicans voted to keep Jordan as their nominee. Nine Republicans have since announced plans to seek their party's nomination. All but two of the Republican candidates sought to block the certification of President Biden's 2020 election victory. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. When we come back, as the death toll in Gaza tops 5,000, we speak to the Palestinian scholar Jihad Abu Salim, who grew up in Gaza. Stay with us. عهد الله نجوع نموت ولا نرحل عهد الثورة والثوار والجماهير ما نرحل عهد الثورة والثوار والجماهير ما نرحل واحنا قطعة من هالأرض واحنا قطعة من هالأرض وعمر الأرض وعهد الله ما نرحل ذهب ما بدي ذهب واحطه عالطاقية بدي عالم Palestinian Freedom Medley by Aya Halaf. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The death toll from Israel's 17-day bombardment of Gaza has topped 5,000 as Israel intensifies its assault on the besieged territory. Palestinian officials say more than 2,000 children have now died in the Israeli attack. Israel's continuing to reject calls from the United Nations for a humanitarian ceasefire. While Israel's intensified its bombing campaign, it has not yet launched a full-scale ground invasion. The New York Times reports the Biden administration has advised Israel to delay a ground invasion, in part to give the U.S. more time to prepare if the war spreads across the region. On Friday, Hamas released its first two hostages, Judith and Natalie Ranin, a mother and daughter, who are dual U.S.-Israeli citizens. They were kidnapped on October 7th, during the Hamas attack on Israel that resulted in the deaths of 1,400 people. The Israeli army now says it believes 222 hostages are being held in Gaza. So far, two aid convoys have entered Gaza, and a third is on its way. But the UN and relief groups say far more aid is needed. Not dozens of trucks, but hundreds of trucks of aid, they say. In Gaza City, doctors in the neonatal section of Al-Shifa Hospital say dozens of babies could soon die if the hospital runs out of fuel.
As you can see, all the babies in here are underweight and need intensive care around the clock, but we lack basic medicines like caffeine citrate and antibiotics like ampicillin and gentamicin and surfactant. We have ventilators, but now seven ventilators are not working because we don't have the right cables to operate them. We are only operating with 10 ventilators, which is a strong sign that the failure of this department is looming. We call on everyone to send the necessary medical supplies for this critical department, or else we will face a huge catastrophe, especially if the electricity is out in these departments where there are 55 babies. We will lose all those who need electricity within 5 minutes.
More than half of Gaza's population has been displaced by the Israeli assault. This is an 18-year-old Palestinian named Dima Alamdani. She'd fled to southern Gaza after Israel ordered Palestinians to leave their homes in the north. Much of her family died in an Israeli airstrike in Khan Yunis, where the family had sought temporary shelter as it made its way south.
I went to look for my mother, my father, and my siblings at the morgue. At first, they told me, come, see your mother. They didn't show me her face, but I recognized her from what she has on her feet. God bless her soul. I felt heartbroken. It was like a nightmare. They opened my father's coffin and had no signs of injuries, but he died. God bless his soul. I had a 16-year-old sister among the dead, and they wrote my name on her coffin since they thought it was me. Her body didn't have any signs of injuries, but maybe she died from internal injuries. They also showed me my little sister. She's in first grade, and they asked me, who is she? At first, I didn't recognize her due to all the cuts and burns on her face. Then they wrote her name on her coffin. I would have never thought that my family would end up like this. I felt heartbroken. It's a nightmare. I can't believe it until now that they're all dead. No one left.
Israel has also bombed the home of Raji Sarani, the best-known human rights lawyer in Gaza City. He and his family survived the attack, his home destroyed. In a message to friends, he wrote, quote, Israel, Biden, and the West who support Israel in doing these crimes against civilians are criminals. We will have our dignity and freedom and end this criminal occupation. One day we will have these criminals accountable, he said. We begin today's show with Jihad Abu Salim, a Palestinian scholar and policy analyst from Gaza. He's the executive director of the Jerusalem Fund in Washington, D.C. Jihad, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you lay out for us what you understand has taken place so far in Gaza and the latest word about whether Israel is going to engage in a ground invasion or when they will? This does not preclude what they've done until now, which is the intensification of airstrikes on Gaza, the death toll at 5,000 people in Gaza.
It appears that Israel has one plan and one plan only, and that is revenge. But revenge is not a plan. Israel is destroying Gaza. Israel has destroyed most of the city of Gaza and many towns and villages across the Gaza Strip, homes to more than one million Palestinians who are now displaced. I think the important question now, that the challenge ahead of us in the United States, in Europe, around the world, is to push for ceasefire. Ceasefire now is what is needed, because as we witness the continuation of killing, of the destruction of the Gaza Strip, as we witness the failure of world governments to hold Israel accountable and to put a stop to this carnage, to this bloodshed, we are devastated, Amy. Entire families are being erased, wiped out off the map and off the civil registry. So I think for us Palestinians in Gaza and beyond, and for every person of conscience around the world, the priority now should be ceasefire to protect civilian lives, to protect the dignity of people, and to prevent the situation from spinning out of control. It already did.
And your response to the Israeli government and military saying they're going to de-Hamasify Gaza, that this was the worst killing of Jews, 1,400 Israelis killed, including other nationalities and religions on October 7th, and that if once they get rid of Hamas in Gaza, Gazans can live there.
Well, they're not leaving a Gaza behind for Gazans, for Palestinians in Gaza to live there. They're practically destroying, carpet bombing the entire city and other towns and villages around across the Gaza Strip. No one wants to see civilians hurt, regardless of who they are or where they come from or what their ethnicities or faiths or nationalities are. There is an important question that I think we need to grapple with as members of this world who care about people's lives and dignity. Is there going to be a military solution on the ground? And the answer is no. There isn't going to be a military solution. Whatever Israel is engaged in right now is pure revenge. It doesn't have any strategic value. And it doesn't have any direction. Israel is just bombing Gaza nonstop, killing as many civilians as it could, simply because it's being enabled by the international community. No one in the international community is asking the tough questions. Is there going to be a military solution? What will this look like? What will this mean for the region? The region is about to be engulfed in far more violence. So I think this is a moment where we need courage, we need boldness, and we need the ability to confront the realities that got us to this point, that got us to this terrible situation. As I'm talking to you, you know, I'm thinking about my family too. My friends receive the news, my friends who are from Gaza and abroad, they receive the news of their entire extended families killed in an instant. There will not be a military solution for this. And the only solution, and I'm happy to talk about this on your show today, the only path forward is to face the situation with courage and ask ourselves, how did we get here?
Talk about that solution that you can see at this point.
I think there has to be a reassessment of the entire approach towards the Palestine question and the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, as many in the West like to describe it. I think we have witnessed decades of failure, especially by successive U.S. administrations that promised that they would mediate and negotiate and lead Palestinians and Israelis towards just and lasting peace. But none of these promises have been fulfilled. We've witnessed nothing but cynicism, and we have witnessed nothing but continuous enabling of successive Israeli governments to continue with their policies of uprooting Palestinians, ethnically cleansing them, destroying their lives, and destroying any possibility for Palestinian statehood and independence. And I think one of the biggest U.S. failures in foreign policy we have just witnessed over, especially this year, as we saw the U.S. administration enabling the most right-wing government in Israeli history, a government that included people like Smotrich and Ben-Gvir, who casually talked about wanting to ethnically cleanse Palestinians. We heard statements by Israeli officials about the need for a second Nakba. And as Israel and the Israeli settlers who were backed by the full force of the Israeli state were attacking Palestinian communities across the West Bank, burning homes, killing people, taking over land, the United States government has given this right-wing government in Israel a visa waiver program that excluded Palestinian Americans, especially those from Gaza, and was pushing for an Israeli-Saudi normalization in a way that empowered Netanyahu's vision that peace with the rest of the Arab world can be achieved through bypassing Palestinians and ignoring their just demands. So I think there has to be a complete reconfiguration of this approach, and there has to be, and tough questions need to be asked.
Jihad, I wanted to get your comment on the Israeli military informing Palestinians in Gaza that they would be identified as a partner in a terrorist organization if they didn't follow forced displacement orders and move south. This message came in leaflets that were dropped from the sky by drones on Saturday after Israel